Just how dangerous are these people that Jude is referring to in his letter? Just how dangerous are those that he has spent some time sketching a portrait for you and I in verse 12 and 13? Well, I think you can tell how much of a threat to society or how much of a threat to church a person is by the severity of the sentence they receive, right? Somebody who blows through a stop sign is going to maybe get a ticket. Somebody who gets drunk and blows through a stop sign is going to go to jail. Somebody who gets drunk and blows through a stop sign and kills an innocent pedestrian is going to go to prison. Somebody who gets drunk on purpose and blows through a stop sign on purpose and runs people over on purpose is, depending on which state you're in for even something worse. So what's the sentence being given to these individuals? Because the severity of the sentence indicates to you and I how dangerous these people actually are to the church. Well, I'll be short with you here. These individuals are sentenced to death. They have received the death sentence. They will go to hell in the end. How do I know this? Because Jude can't keep quiet, but repeatedly infers that that is the fate of these individuals. In verse 4, he says that they were marked out for condemnation. That means hell. Verse 5, he says destruction. In verse 6, he talks about everlasting chains. In verse 7, he speaks of the vengeance of eternal fire. In verse 13, the blackness of darkness forever. In verse 15, as I'll read in just a moment, judgment and conviction is theirs. We're talking about eternal hell. This is the most severe of judgment. I'll tell you that the electric chair looks pretty in comparison. Lethal injection is polite when you put it against what God is speaking of here for those who have crept into the church and prey upon God's people. Look at verse 14. Now Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesied about these men, saying, quote, "Behold, the Lord comes with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment on all, to convict all who are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds, which they have committed in an ungodly way, and of all the harsh things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him." We're speaking of individuals that are ungodly among them. Among who? Among people in church. Those who go to church and yet live ungodly lives and say ungodly things and commit ungodly deeds in an ungodly way. Charles Spurgeon says, "This is a dreadful thought." Yeah, it is, Charles. It is quite dreadful. He goes on to say, these are members of the church. Yeah, I know, Charles. That's what makes it so dreadful. He says, these are members of the church for whom there are seats reserved in hell. Not the heathen. Not for the open refusers of the gospel, but for those who creep in undetected, who live unholy lives. That is a terrible thought. To know that we will, depending on how long you remain in the church, you will have been in the company with, you will have likely become close friends with, you may likely have been even closer to than mere friendships. Those who in the end perish forever in eternal fire. That's a chilling thought. I may be looking at, I shudder to think that on Judgment Day, my name might be being called by those that are subjected to the wrath of God. That there may be some screaming with their last breath, "But ask Justin, I was at his church! I knew so-and-so!" If you're a Christian, your name is going to be thrown out there. I believe that there will be such desperation that there will be a clinging to anything that might save them, but nothing will work. They were marked out long ago for this condemnation. They were warned and warned and warned, and yet they sat here anyway. In the end, we will have known some of them. We will have served alongside of them. We will have gone on missions trips alongside of some of them. We will have gone through ministry training with some of them, discipleship training with some of them, doctrinal classes with some of them. But do we see a theme here in verse 15? That Jesus is coming back to execute judgment on all, to convict all who are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds, which they have committed in an ungodly way, and of all the harsh things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. You get the theme there? They're a bit ungodly. And I kind of explained this last time, I believe, that ungodly kind of means not godly or no longer godly. Like if I'm unchained, it means I used to be chained. Right? So ungodly means you used to be godly, or at least people thought you were. You're not godly. You're not Christian. You're no longer Christian. They used to be, or they said they were, but in the end, it proves to not really have been the case at all. And in the end, it's proven in how, like Cain and Korah and Balaam, they make havoc in the church. So don't make havoc in the church. Don't make trouble in the church. Don't bring division. Don't make it hard on everybody and then go around saying you're a Christian. We're to be striving for peace and unity in this building with these people. In verse 14, it says that Jesus is coming back with his saints. That's us, beloved. When Jesus comes back out of the clouds to set up his kingdom on this earth, that the Christians are coming with him to convict all who have spoken against Jesus. And you got to understand something here, that any attack against a true Christian, whether physical or verbal, we're not talking about physical attack here, but verbal, is an attack on Christ himself, or at least that's how Jesus sees it. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1 talks about how Jesus is going to come back and he is going to take vengeance with flaming fire, take vengeance on those who troubled other Christians. So there may come a point in your life where you just become so embittered toward me or us that you want to cause trouble. You want to make us pay. God will let you, but the payment that he will exact from you so far exceeds anything you could ever do to another Christian, including killing them. It's a dangerous thing to mess with Christians. It just is. And I don't say that as a, like, arrogant, you know, but you know what? My dad can beat up your dad. My dad can beat up you. My dad can kill you. You mess with a Christian, you're messing with God. And these people come into church and they make nothing of it. They cause trouble. They speak out against. They bring division. The most fatal form of selfishness, says one commentary, is the selfishness that puts on a spiritual costume and then takes advantage of Christians. That's the most fatal form of selfishness. Church is the last place to be selfish, guys. You do not want to be selfish here. We're here to serve one another. We're here to love, to sacrifice, to literally give up our lives for one another. You bring selfishness into that mix, you are playing with fire. So it seems pretty clear here that God takes exception to those who pretend to be godly when they aren't at all, because they infiltrate the church and then make life miserable for God's children. He didn't like that. He didn't like it when people make trouble for his bride. He takes exception to that. In verse 16, Jude says, these are grumblers, complainers, walking according to their own lusts, and they mouth great swelling words, flattering people to gain advantage, saying whatever needs to be said to get people to think they're something. Now, I want you to notice the contrast of how severe the judgment of verses 14 and 15 appears to be. Notice how severe that judgment is, and compare it to how innocuous the sins that condemned them seem to be. I mean, complaining? They're going to go to hell because they complained? I mean, that seems rather harmless. But God's going to incinerate people in eternal hell for doing it? For lying? He's going to destroy them for being selfish? I mean, to me, it seems like it would make a little bit more sense if God said he's going to throw people in hell for being sexual deviants or psychopathic serial killers or cannibals or something. But grumbling? Well, what is it that makes them grumble? That's the big question. What are they complaining about? I'll tell you. Whether it be with their voice box or in their heart, they're grumbling and complaining about having to do God's will. Having to do things God's way. Having to do things the way God has told the church to do them. They don't want rules. They think they deserve better than whatever God's will is for them. In their heart, they say things like, well, I shouldn't have to put up with that. The people to whom Jude is referring aren't delighted to discover and do God's will like real Christians are. They have no interest in living for his pleasure because it doesn't bring them enough pleasure. They walk according to their own lusts, after all. And God keeps interfering with that. I just want to live life. I just want to do what I want to do. But the church keeps getting in the way. God keeps getting in the way. And so they secretly hate God for it. They hate God. But, you know, they got to keep up the facade, and so they pretend to love him. But they grow to hate his representatives. They'll hate the people in the church. They'll hate select people in the Christian community. They'll stick a knife in their back and walk away and go to another church and keep loving God. Doesn't make any sense to me. Listen, beloved, we need to beware of these people because they have come around and they're probably going to come back. Not the same ones. They never come back. When they're gone, they're dead. At least spiritually speaking. Cain didn't come back from the grave, and neither did Korah. But their spiritual descendants are alive and well, and they will come through this church again. And might I remind you, they won't be wearing a name tag. They'll try to fool you into believing that they're something when they're nothing. People who see God as a hard master and themselves as a good servant. People who feel mistreated. The people that Jude has drawn for you and I this morning are people that are already on their way to hell. It just takes them a lifetime to get there. But they're already in that direction. And unfortunately for you and I in the church, we have to put up with them in the meantime. Because on and on it goes. This has been happening since chapter 4 of the Bible when Cain was introduced. And the church is no stranger to these individuals. because they frequent our fellowship. Until, of course, they finally kill an Abel or lash out at a Moses or sell out the entire JFB church to finally get whatever they wanted all along. Why is Jude bringing this up? Because he wants Jesus' fellowship of believers to be privy to what these folks look like. Take a good look at the composite sketch that we have before us this morning and learn to recognize these criminals. Learn to recognize them and protect yourself against them. Let's pray. Father God, I think sometimes you see church as a way more dangerous place than we do. Some of the most despicable individuals that have ever walked the face of the earth were found among God's people. And the consequences for being duped by them are severe. And if you didn't expect us to take the responsibility unto ourselves to recognize them and to be careful of them, then you wouldn't have written Jude. But you did, and you put it in the Bible, and we're to learn from it. May we learn to see through spiritually discerning eyes that we might recognize the portrait in these individuals when they come through the church, because they're dangerous. They're just simply dangerous. Thousands of people died because they couldn't see Korah for who he was. So many people suffered because of Balaam's selfishness. And an innocent man was bludgeoned to death because Cain thought he could worship God however he pleased. We look forward to the day, me and the rest of us in here who have truly been called, we look forward to the day when church is perfect, when Christ comes back and we get to fellowship and worship without spots in our love feasts, without the distractions and the divisions and the disappointments, but when fellowship and worship and just church is as it was supposed to be from the beginning, where we're all together singing and praising and worshiping and fellowshipping without anything to trouble us. But until then, Lord, this is war. And Satan plants tares among the wheat. And we're called to contend for the faith and be on our guard. So I pray that we would.